Good mornings, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, we keep hearing that the president is unleashing American energy and bringing down utility costs, but then we still get sticker shock every time we open that bill. We speak with the executive director of the Citizens Utility Board of Ohio. Also this morning, to your health, hidradenitis suppurativa is a chronic skin disease that can cause painful nodules and scarring and often takes years to be correctly diagnosed and effectively treated. We'll learn more. And happening around town, members of the cast will join us to preview the upcoming Fort Findlay Playhouse production of Into the Woods. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, July 20th, 2026. Here is big news to start off your week. If you hadn't already heard about this or you hadn't already noticed, because it actually went into effect on Friday, Apple is hiking the prices of Apple Music subscription prices. They're hiking the price. It's the first rate increase since the fall of 2022. They cite higher music licensing costs. The individual plan for Apple Music is going from $10.99 to $11.99 a month, with the family price rising to $19.99 a month from $16.99. So it is quite the hike. Meanwhile, the student plan for Apple Music is going from $5.99 to $6.99 per month. And again, as we mentioned, the price hike actually took effect on Friday. So if you haven't checked your subscription, check that and you will see that it is higher than it was last week. I don't know how many people actually have Apple Music, because I think Spotify is really the more popular thing. But anyway, Apple Music is raising its prices elsewhere. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day to get your Monday morning started. The U.S. Mint is soon going to be striking that $1 coin featuring President Trump. A rendering of the new coin was released last Wednesday, commemorating the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. The gold coin is not real gold. It boasts a gold-like finish and will be available in the fall. The only previous time that a living president was featured on currency struck by the U.S. Mint was 100 years ago. The half-dollar coin at that time featured then-President Calvin Coolidge, who was shown in silhouette behind the bust of President George Washington. But President Trump going to be very prominently featured on the semi-quincentennial dollar coin from the U.S. Mint. If you want to add that to your collection, it's coming in the fall. Meanwhile, speaking of money, the Common Sense Act, since spelled C-E-N-T-S, Common Sense Act, passed the House last week, could pave the way for a redesigned nickel to enter into circulation. It addresses the three main aspects of U.S. currency, but still needs to pass through the Senate and be signed into law before it can take effect. The bill formally ends the production of the penny. We haven't produced the penny for, what, about a year now, at the direction of President Trump and the Secretary of the Treasury. But this would make that formal, the discontinuation of the penny. It also addresses how retailers should give you change when they don't have any pennies, and shifts focus to the nickel. According to California Congressman Robert Garcia, under the Common Sense Act, the Treasury would be allowed to test a redesigned lower-cost nickel that must ensure it saves money while continuing to work in vending machines. That's the big thing. We're going to change our money. We got to make sure that, you know, it still works in all of the vending machines that are out there, because you're not going to change all the vending machines in the United States, right? So anyway, changing the composition of a coin can be a difficult proposition. So for now, the nation's second lowest denomination will continue to keep its same look and same material makeup. But this bill does authorize the mint to take a look at other lower cost alternatives, because that was the justification for getting rid of the penny, that it costs more than a penny to mint a penny. Well, in reality, it costs more than a nickel to mint a nickel. So by that same logic, we should do away with the 5-cent piece as well. And eventually you can see where this is going. If we keep eliminating denominations, we're not going to be left with a whole lot in pretty short order. But anyway, they're going to try and redesign the nickel so it costs less than a nickel to make. We'll see how it all goes. The Common Sense Act passed the House, now awaits action in the Senate. And a couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know to get your Monday morning started. How was your weekend, by the way? I hope you had a good one. Hope you enjoyed. We got a little bit of rain over the weekend. We could use that, so that was kind of nice. Like I mentioned, the World Cup was going on over the week. World Cup third place game in the final. I don't know if you caught any of that. The British Open held over the weekend for golf fans. Now that the World Cup is over, we can turn our attention to American football. Back where it belongs, we can shift our focus back where it belongs, to American football. Football fans and Disney fans can now show their support for both their favorite NFL teams and their most beloved Disney characters. The Walt Disney Company and Champion Sportswear unveiled a collection last week that pairs all 32 NFL teams with characters from the Disney universe, including Disney and Marvel and Star Wars and Pixar and, you know, all of their properties. The first 8 team character matchups in the collection were revealed at Fanatics Fest, New York City, last week. And some of the pairings include Disney's Captain Hook paired with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because that makes sense, right? The New England Patriots and Marvel's Captain America are the pairing. Again, makes sense. The Dallas Cowboys, I thought this was clever. The Dallas Cowboys and Woody from Toy Story. All right. Because he's a cowboy, right? So they have t-shirts and crew necks and sweatshirts for those first pairings that are available now. And then the remaining team pairings will be revealed in August once we get to NFL season. And that is when merchandise for all 32 teams will be available at Fanatics.com, at the NFL shop online, at the Disney store, and at select Lids locations nationwide. So look forward to that. For a football fan and a Disney fan, or both, fan of one or the other, or both, maybe of interest to you. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Today is the anniversary of Neil Armstrong's first steps on the moon. Apollo 11 landed on the moon. It was the crowning achievement of humankind. I can't think of anything that we have ever done as human beings that would be more impressive than landing a human being on another celestial body. We land them on another planet. I don't know what you call the moon a planet, but you get the idea. This was the crowning achievement of humankind. And it happened on this day, what was it, 57 years ago, on this date. And in conjunction with that, I thought this was very interesting. A simple felt tip pen that helped save the Apollo 11 mission has just sold for over $850,000 at a Sotheby's auction. So here is the story, in case you didn't know this. Buzz Aldrin used a silver plastic pen to fix a broken circuit breaker aboard the lunar module during the mission back in 1969. Apparently, the story goes that maybe a heavy backpack or some other object that was floating around the capsule bumped into the circuit breaker and snapped off the switch that powered the engine that was needed to leave the moon's surface when it came time to blast off from the moon and rejoin the orbiter to come back home. Had they not been able to switch that circuit breaker on, they wouldn't have been able to get off the moon. So this is fairly important. This was a fairly important switch, and it had been snapped off. Mission Control was unable to reroute power to bypass that particular circuit breaker, and so Buzz Aldrin improvised. He said, since it was electrical, I decided probably best not to put my finger in there or use anything that had metal on the end, and so the felt tip pen did the trick. He wedged it in there. This is like what we do in our homes, and something doesn't work, we jerry-rig it. And he did that on board the lunar module, and the circuit breaker held, and they were able to return to Earth. The pen and the broken switch were sold together from Buzz Aldrin's personal collection, $857,000. Sotheby's auction. You would think that that would be something that should be in a museum somewhere, but it's in someone's private collection. So kind of interesting there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Severe weather, power outages, deadly flash flooding, and severe air quality issues made for a dangerous weekend in Ohio. The Canadian wildfire smoke broke dangerous air quality records, reduced visibility, and caused many events to be delayed, postponed, or canceled. Another round of severe weather is expected to impact central and southeast Ohio tomorrow. In southeast Ohio, the U.S. Bureau of Land Management announced it will open a lease auction in September to make over 2,800 acres of Wayne National Forest open for commercial oil and gas fracking. The move comes at a time where local residents are concerned about groundwater and drinking water contamination. In northeast Ohio, the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland reports that while manufacturing demand is being boosted by data center construction, it is not enough to offset the negative impact high fuel costs are having on the region's consumer spending power. In northwest Ohio, the automotive carbon monoxide poisoning death toll is now at 5 after the fourth and last child passed away over the weekend. In southwest Ohio, the eastbound entrance and exits at the Interstate 74 and Dry Fork interchange in Harrison are closed for the next 45 days due to an $8.25 million bridge widening and renovation project. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
The ONN Daily Podcast. Get a recap of all the day's news from across the state.
ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus has more.
Haley Kirby reporting in downtown Toledo.
From the State House, Kevin Landers.
ONN Canton.
ONN affiliate WKYC-TV in Cleveland explains.
In Marietta, Brett Wharf, ONN News.
Emma Henderson in Genoa.
The ONN Daily Podcast. Listen at onnradio.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts from the Ohio News Network.
So, you know, we keep hearing that the president is unleashing American energy and bringing down utility costs, but then we still get sticker shock every time we open up that bill. So which is it? If cheaper power is out there, why does the bill keep going up? Tom Bullock is with us this morning. He is executive director of the Citizens Utility Board of Ohio. And Tom, before we get into all of this here, I want to make sure that we are clear about this for those who aren't familiar with Citizens Utility Board of Ohio. You are not an official entity of the state government. It's kind of a name that sounds a little bit like a kind of official, like it would be a state agency or a state board, but that is not the case. You are not affiliated with the government. You are a group that lobbies the state government on utility issues.
We're a nonprofit statewide advocate for
consumers, both your natural gas monthly bill and your electric utility bill. Seems like we spend all our time on electricity these days. But that's right. We're not state government. We work with them. We educate consumers. We sometimes do legal cases in the interest of consumers having lower bills and better options, more control. And the answer to why electricity bills are going up and up and up is it's a layer cake of many reasons. Politics is one of them. Industry growth, including data centers, is one of them. General inflation, including tariffs, is one of them. International wars, there's a whole...
But again, that kind of contrasts with the message as we were raising the question in the introduction. That kind of contrasts with what we are hearing all the time, that we are unleashing American energy. And in fact, for example, we heard for years about the natural gas boom in Ohio being cheap and abundant and produced right here in the state. It was going to make energy costs among the cheapest in the nation. So what happened?
It's partly happened, but to use natural gas, you need pipelines, and those are expensive. To use natural gas, you need new gas turbines. Those are on back order for 5 or 6 or 8 years, and those are expensive. And so you can have all the cheap fuel you want, but if you can't get it into electron form and put those electrons on the grid, it doesn't help me this month, next month, or next year. So... Those are people admiring the different ingredients. But I should also say they're adding one supply in one case, but then they're erecting barriers to other supplies in other cases. So it's like trying to drive your car with one foot on the accelerator and one foot on the brake.
So what is being shut out in that equation?
New forms of energy like wind and solar, that's been heavily politicized. Those are the cheapest, or they compete for the cheapest. But some of the White House's favorite political allies have been pulling a lot of strings to get favors, and that's the coal industry. The reason they're a problem is they're trying to get subsidies for 50-year-old power plants, 60-year-old power plants, 70-year-old power plants that are just built old. They're not built to be clean, and they're not built to be quick on their feet when it comes to changing market conditions. And their own owners are sick of losing money, and they're trying to close them, which is how business is supposed to work. Why lose money when you can have a better factory, better facility, better product that is gets the job done at a lower price? And instead of allowing that natural churn in the marketplace to occur, politics has gotten in the way. We need to get political parties out of our utility bills, because right now we're denying ourselves new quick-to-market options that will help to start to blow inflation and level it off and eventually bring prices down.
You mentioned renewable energy, wind and solar, as the prime examples, probably the most common examples, certainly in this part of the country. But I want to focus in and have you expand on what you said a little bit earlier, that renewable energy is less expensive. And that goes against what many folks believe, that this is actually more expensive to increase our reliance on renewable energy.
Well, 20 years ago, that might have been true, but not recently. The technology is better and cheaper. Just like the laptop you purchased 10 years ago was twice as expensive and half as powerful, today the new products are half as expensive and twice as effective. So that happens especially with new technology as it becomes more commonplace. The production lines get better and the cost efficiencies go up. And so those things are working in our favor on wind and solar, and also battery storage, which isn't actually a form of production, but what batteries can do is it captures the extra power that we have at some times of the day and can then release that power when we need it in the hot summer afternoons, for example. All right. No. So I think what you're hearing is old videotapes. And I do mean videotapes, because you've got people who've got an agenda thinking like it's the 1980s, and that does the economy no favors.
In fact, you point out that solar has now surpassed coal in electricity generation domestically. if solar is in, has surpassed coal, and if solar is less expensive as you lay it out, then again, why are we not seeing that trickle down into the bills, utility bills for average Americans?
Well, we are partly, but what is also happening is that overall demand is going up as data centers hit, as people are electrifying homes and transportation, and even some factories reshoring to America, which is a good thing. We want those, right? So power demand was plateauing. It was flat for the last 25 years or so, but now it's increasing. And the equipment to do power generation, the traditional stuff, takes a decade to plan and build. Wind or solar, if it's the right size, can be about 2 years. You've got to plan ahead, and we have, this country has not planned ahead, and then it's at layering politics on top of that. I think the answer is we're going to have a mix of energy sources. We're not going to be all one thing or another. And as newer, cheaper sources have entered the mix, it's helped with the pricing. It's just not keeping up with the pace.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Ultimately, we will need a mix, because saying that solar has surpassed coal, that's interesting, that's great, but we're still only producing, what, about 10% of our power from alternative sources like solar and wind, I think it is, something like that in the States. So we still need traditional energy like coal and gas power plants and all of this. So it sounds almost like what you're saying in a roundabout way is that rising prices are, in some respects, unavoidable.
They can be avoidable to the degree that we're facing. And we just got bad news that next year's year ahead auction for a regional grid will once again be at the price cap. So about a third of your bill, depending on how you measure it, is determined by the regional grid. And that's where the data centers have been really impacting us. And we got confirmed that we're not going to get any relief next year. So prices are going to stay high. But if we plan better, they wouldn't be as high. And we'd have more of a prediction that things are going to levelize and come back down. But we haven't planned. So we've got nothing but inflation as far as the eye can see.
Well, and that leads to the next question I wanted to ask you. What can the utility companies do differently to help bring costs down for consumers? Or are they even motivated to do that?
Well, they're not. That's the problem. We're telling utilities by the way that we pay them that we want them to build new things and expensive new things. And lots of big, expensive new things. So there's an argument to be made that utilities should get compensated for repairing the very expensive poles and wires that have already been built for the last 50 and 100 years. But the utilities have not been doing deferred maintenance because they don't make as much money on those things. So we've got 50-year-old transformers breaking, which is the most predictable thing in the world. All right, so that's part of it. The other answer is, there's independent power generators that are not in Ohio. I think this is a good law. They're competitive generators. So they're separate from the major utilities who own the poles and wires and send us our bills. They can have a degree of free market competition. And that's the side that's running into the politics. And so now when the new better mousetrap comes along in the American free market economy, it's supposed to allow the new better mousetrap to come along and put competitive pressure on the old product. And we like that because things get better and prices get cheaper. But for some reason, we're interfering with that market competition. I'll give you one guess what the reason is.
Let me ask you this real quickly, and we're almost out of time, but I do want to have you touch on this because you've mentioned it a couple of times. You brought up data centers, and obviously that is a huge issue right now all over the state of Ohio and all over the country. And a lot of people see the proliferation of power-hungry data centers as the reason, the main reason, that their utility costs are going up. How much impact does that really have? How much of those costs are trickling down to average consumers?
A lot, but it's not the whole story. But it is the quickest inflating piece. And I think the concern is appropriate and real. And it's pressuring the people who plan how many new transmission lines get built and how many power plants get built to think better and smarter. Some were completely caught flat-footed.
So that concern or that argument is valid, but it also goes back to what you were saying about planning for the future and the fact that we haven't done as good a job of that as we should. Tom Bullock is executive director of the Citizens Utility Board of Ohio. Obviously, you have much more on this for those who want to dig into the weeds a little bit further at your website, correct?
Correct. It's cuboh.org. I guess my message is the state and the federal government need to stop erecting artificial barriers to new power generation just because they're playing politics with some fuel sources. Don't subsidize the old expensive stuff. Get out of the way of the new, less expensive stuff. That old saying, help or get out of the way, it still applies.
We will leave it there. Tom Bullock, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, from the Health and Medical File this morning, have you ever heard of the chronic skin disease referred to as HS? I can't even begin to pronounce what that stands for, so I'm not even going to try. If you haven't heard of it, though, you are not alone, not because it's rare, but because it's rarely talked about. But HS can cause painful nodules and scarring, and for many people, it often takes years to receive a correct diagnosis and treatment. Katina is an HS patient. She is with us this morning, along with Dr. Vivian Shee from the University of Washington in Seattle. And Dr. Shee, let me actually start with you. Explain what HS is and why it takes so long to get a diagnosis.
Yeah, HS actually stands for hidradenitis suppurativa. It is a mouthful.
Yes.
It's a chronic skin condition where, yes, you're right. Chronic skin condition where you get painful bumps and boils in areas where the skin rubs against each other, like the armpits, below the chest, in the groin. And the key here is that it's progressive. So if left untreated, it can cause permanent scarring and tissue damage. The average time from onset of symptoms to reaching a diagnosis is about 7 to 10 years.
Wow.
And that is way too long. And that's due to a constellation of things, right? So, you know, things wax and wane, people wait to see the doctor. And it's also in private and sensitive sites, so people may be reluctant to speak out. That's why we're here today, to bring awareness to this condition.
And Katina, when did you first notice symptoms? How long did it take to get your diagnosis? What were some of the challenges that you had to deal with before you actually got that diagnosis?
I first started seeing symptoms at the age of 11.
Wow.
And I did not get an accurate diagnosis until I was 41. That's 30 years.
Goodness.
Before getting a diagnosis. And it impacted my daily life. What I did, such as walking, standing, going and engaging with others in social activities. It's a very isolating condition for many people. So that's why it's important to see a dermatologist as soon as you can, to have these type of conversations so that you can get diagnosis early.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Shee, how is HS treated or managed? I know you've got something called the HS Truths Initiative to help encourage, as we were saying, earlier recognition, earlier treatment. How do you manage this condition?
Yeah, HS is a complex condition, so it deserves and requires multimodal treatment, which could include lifestyle modification, medication treatments, and for some people who have scarring and draining tunnels, surgery may be needed. And that's why it's important to capture that window of opportunity of treatment, to do it early before irreversible damage. And the earlier we treat, the easier it is to treat. And so HS Truth is an educational initiative from Insight, with whom we're partnering with today. It is an initiative to help bring visibility of HS and encourage people living with this condition to have an open dialogue with their dermatologist in order to empower them and encourage them to reduce the stigma of this condition.
Katina, 30 years is just an extraordinarily long time to deal with any condition, much less one that is so impactful as this one. I would imagine that once you finally got the diagnosis and you can say, hey, this is what's been going on all that time, I can't even imagine the kind of weight that must have been lifted.
Yes. It was a testament to the resilience that people who live with chronic illnesses like HS have to have.
Yeah.
And that I discovered that I'm not alone, that there is a community of people who have this this condition. And it's important for us to be willing to advocate for ourselves. And this is why I'm here to share that there is hope and there is an opportunity for you to thrive despite living with HS.
And that's what I was going to ask. Is that why you are out there sharing your story? What do you hope those who are experiencing the same symptoms that you did, what do you hope that they will take away from your story?
I want them to seek treatment as soon as possible, to not feel the stigma of this condition to the point that it makes them to remain silent. It's important for us to use our voices. And that's also why I created my nonprofit organization, Inflamed Sisters Thriving, so that these type of uncomfortable conversations can become more normal so that people can get early treatment and diagnosis.
Yeah, as we mentioned, this is not a rare condition, but one that is rarely talked about. So, Dr. Shi, let's kind of break it down and leave folks with it. What are the key things that we want to leave folks with respect to HS, and where can folks learn more?
I think the key thing is if you think yourself or someone you know might be suffering from HS, like the symptoms and the locations we talked about, do not wait. Talk to your healthcare provider, ask for a referral to a dermatologist who will help you reach the correct diagnosis and initiate appropriate treatments timely. And for more information, you can visit myhstruth.com.
We will put that link on our webpage so folks can get more information there. Again, as we always say with respect to medical or health information, the best source of info for your specific situation is going to be your doctor. But we'll put the link up there for good general info as well. Again, Katina, thank you very much for taking the time. And Dr. Vivian Shi, the University of Washington in Seattle, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Important information for folks. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We have a veritable smorgasbord of news, broken news, from the state of Florida, the Sunshine State, in the spotlight this morning in the broken news. First of all, a 76-year-old woman in Pompano Beach was stunned after receiving a new license plate in the mail. Have you heard about this story? Have you seen this? Apparently, the license plate had the combination SQZ A55. Now, if you think about it, SQZ A55, and in Florida, with the font that they use on the license plates, the fives really look like S's. They really do. And so you can see where this is going. Nancy Dello Strito said the plate quickly became the talk of her retirement community. When she first saw it, she wondered how it could have passed inspection and said she didn't think a senior who is almost 77 should be driving around with a license plate that has that to say. SQZ A55. But instead of immediately asking for a replacement, she was encouraged by her sons and her friends to keep it. And now she says, maybe it was fate. Maybe I'll even get a few honks. If you haven't seen it and you still haven't been able to figure out what we're talking about, go online and look this up. The license plate in Pompano Beach. It really is funny when you see it. Think about it. Moving on, the broken news. A Miami woman is facing serious charges after stabbing her friend multiple times during an argument over drinking beer in an Uber. Lynn Marie Zamora, age 32, was arrested last Monday on an aggravated battery charge with a deadly weapon. According to police, Zamora, Ms. Zamora grew irritated when her friend repeatedly told her she couldn't drink beer during the ride in the Uber. And apparently she was arguing, that's why I took an Uber, so I could drink. The argument continued until Ms. Zamora pulled a pair of scissors from her bag and stabbed her friend in the bicep and the calf. The victim was treated nearby emergency room. The Uber driver confirmed the entire incident. An Uber spokesperson for the company said this behavior is alarming and has no place on the Uber platform. Ms. Zamora, who is currently on probation for battery, had her bond set at $7,500. Wow. With friends like that, you know? All over drinking a beer in the backseat of an Uber. Yeah, that is frowned upon. And lastly here in the broken news this morning, a Florida homeowner got an unexpected visitor last week when a large alligator broke through a screened pool enclosure and went for an early morning swim. Police in Venice, Florida, say a Ring camera alerted the homeowner to the gator's presence about 5:45 this past Tuesday morning in the community of Tuscana Isles. A trapper with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission safely removed the gator, which measured in at 9 feet 4 inches long. The encounter comes during alligator mating season, which is going on right now, when wildlife officials say the reptiles tend to be more active. Really? I thank you for the heads up, in case you needed one more reason not to visit Florida this time of year. Alligator mating season. It was 9.5 feet long, this gator. And there you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
WFIN needs your help to stuff the bus with school supplies for needy students in our area. Go to WFIN.com for donation information. Bring your donation to the Yellow School Bus at the Tiffin Avenue McDonald's in Findlay, Thursday and Friday, July 23rd and 24th from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. School supply registration forms are required and can be accessed at cchsupport.org. Stuff the Bus brought to you by McDonald's, Flag City Auto Wash, Tidy Rides, Family Resource Center, and 1330 WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. I saw this item and it left me just kind of shaking my head, but I guess this is where we are today. How judgmental do you have to be to judge someone by the background image on their smartphone? I mean, we shouldn't be judging people superficially anyway, but of all of the things to judge people based on, a new survey finds that 14% of Americans quietly judge others based on their phone's wallpaper, believing that it says something about your personality. That's what they think. This poll of 2,000 Americans found that younger generations lead this habit, probably not surprising. 33% of Gen Zers and 17% of millennials admit to judging people by the background image on their phone. Family photos top the most popular backgrounds at 19%, followed by nature or landscapes and personal memories, both at 11%. Notably, pet photos outrank romantic partners. We are more likely to have a photo of our pet on our phone as our wallpaper than our spouse or significant other. 10% to 7%. 1 in 10 Americans stick with the manufacturer default, which is kind of boring. But again, I'm not judging. Many people do, but I'm trying not to judge here. Of those who do judge other people by the background image on their phone, 12% say they visit, 12% say they view default wallpapers negatively, seeing them as uninspired. Hey, if I want the default wallpaper on my phone, I mean, who am I to judge if someone else does that? I don't get it. But here's the flip side of this. Yes, some people can be judgmental based on, you know, just having the default background on your phone. But it's not necessarily all negative. 32% actually consider someone who does that, just use the default wallpaper, 32% see that as a sign of practicality. Once again, we are joined by our friends at the Fort Findlay Playhouse. Their next production opens soon. It is the classic show, Into the Woods. Just a terrific show. Joining us from the cast are Adam Wilford and Daphne Bauer. And thank you both for being with us here this morning. We appreciate it. For those who are not familiar, tell us more about the show. Give us a brief synopsis of Into the Woods.
Do you want me to take this?
Go ahead.
Basically, it's several fairy tales mixed together. You have Cinderella, you have Baker and his wife, Little Red Riding Hood, Jack and the Beanstalk, and... Basically, it's their stories, how they go into the woods to solve some problems. Mm-hmm. The witch sends, I play the witch. She sends them in to basically kind of fix her problem as well.
So this is, people are familiar with, the first one that immediately jumps to my mind is Wicked, well-known production that's based off of a fairy tale or a children's story. This kind of is the same thing, weaving a bunch of stories that we are familiar with into this new narrative, giving it sort of a fresh spin on quote-unquote the story we thought we knew.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, the first act actually is more like the... It ends up kind of the happily ever after on all these stories. And then the second act is more what happens after happily ever after.
Yeah. And what is, obviously the being the witch in the story, in any fairy tale, the witch is sort of the antagonist and the, you know, kind of the main villain in the story. That's got to be an awful lot of fun to play that role.
Oh, it is. Yeah, you kind of dig down into that deep, dark nastiness.
And meanwhile, Adam, you have the role of the baker in this production. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So tell us a little bit about that aspect or your role in the show.
So the baker and his wife, they don't have any children, mm-hmm. and they want to have a child, but they come to find out that the witch has cursed their house because of something his father did. And so she sends them into the woods to collect items. And kind of that's the journey that we take through the show, collecting these items to break the curse.
It really is a terrific show. And I know this has been a hit. There's a touring production has been hit, obviously hit on Broadway, and just a really fun show to produce and to be a part of.
Oh, yes. I think the best part is there's just so many characters and everyone has an integral part in it. There's no small characters. There's no, you know, no one's more important than the other one. You have to have everyone working together.
Yeah. So give us all of the details on this show. When do you open? What are the dates? Give us all of the nuts and bolts here.
So the performances are going to start opening nights July 30th, because July 30th through August 2nd, August 6th through the 9th, and August 13th through the 16th.
Nope, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt
there.
I was
going to say the week, like Thursday through Saturday, the performances are at 8 o'clock, and the Sunday performances, they're at 3.
Okay. And tickets are on sale now? They gone on sale?
Yep, they went on sale last night at midnight.
Okay.
So, sale at Fort Finley fortfinleyplayhouse.thundertix.com.
Okay, and if you want to learn more about the show, you've got it linked up. We've got it linked up at our webpage, so you can learn more about Into the Woods and get your tickets. It is a terrific production, a terrific show. You will not want to miss this. And you've got more shows coming up. I know you've got another second stage production coming up here really soon. And whenever we talk with the folks at the Fort Finley Playhouse, we like to mention this is a community theater for all. If anyone has ever wanted to get up on stage and join in the cast, you are always welcoming new folks to be a part of the entourage.
Oh, absolutely. And this show has several new people and I love having them. We'll always love seeing new faces at auditions and on the stage.
And if folks want to learn more about, and I also should mention that it's not just, you know, on stage. If, you know, you want to help out behind the scenes, you're always looking for those who can help out who may not be necessarily be born to be on the stage in the spotlight.
Yeah, there's lots of different roles. You know, there's costuming, building the sets, painting sets, all sorts of different roles that people can get involved with.
And for more information about the Fort Finley Playhouse and tickets for the show, if you want to learn more about how you can become involved in future productions, again, check out the website. We have it linked up at our webpage, goodmornings.net. Once again, Adam Wilford, Daphne Bauer from the Fort Finley Playhouse production of Into the Woods with us this morning. Hey, guys, thanks very much for taking the time. Once again, the show opens when next? Next weekend?
July 30th.
July 30th. Okay, so it is coming up, and tickets are on sale now. Guys, thanks very much for taking the time. Certainly, best of luck with the show.
Thank you for having us.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That is goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, reach out to us directly via email and more, all right there from the website, again, goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. We thank you very much for that. So, until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.